everybody out there. It's Keith Coogan. Welcome to the call sheet, Tales of the Bone Machine. I'm joined here by Kenneth Gus August. Say hello to everybody, Ken.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, why did I call you Ken? Isn't it? We did that earlier, and it's Gus. I've known you as Gus for years and years and years.
Unless I do something wrong, usually my first name is not pulled out.
Officer, my name is Reginald. Well, hello, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to our humble little podcast. We have a great show tonight. As I said, this is the Tales of the Bone Machine. From the industry, really, from my perspective.
That was what I was going to say. You may want to explain to people exactly what you mean by the bone machine.
Well, my name is Keith Coogan, and I have been an actor for 36 years. And Gus here joining us is a screenwriter, a director. We want to talk to you, and take no mistake. This is not a show about working in Hollywood. For you out there wanting to be in Hollywood or actors, we have no advice.
Oh, good Lord. No.
This is, we have nothing to really help you. There's no, we're not going to give you a step-by-step, you know, how to get an agent or, you know, fake the first couple of credits on your resume until you get that, you know, walk-on part.
You should know that by now anyway.
Yeah, no, we have really nothing to offer, but just our experiences and, we really thank you for tuning in. And
for the most part, I was going to talk for an hour straight anyway, so I'm kind of happy to have someone listening anyway, so I appreciate that.
Now, that's nice. So this music, I really want to thank my friend Jeff Fiorentino. His music, he also does guitar instruction, helps everybody learn how to play guitar at jfrocks.com. Thank you, Jeff, for the introduction music. That's nice. So Gus, thanks for coming out, man. How's it going?
It's going well. It's going well. Happy to be here. Appreciate it. Like I say, before we start, you might want to explain in a little more detail the bone machine.
Well, Hollywood, I have a saying, you know, it's a show business and it's an entertainment industry. And the business, the industry is always entwined in the art. And, you know, on one side of it is being an artist and performing or telling a story, you know, or sharing with the world. And some people they're overly shy people go into acting to overcome that. Other people are class clowns, and they gravitate to that naturally.
Yeah, and in this town, obviously, this is a town where people come from all over the world. Although you specifically, as opposed to people that were coming here, you specifically were born into Hollywood. Your grandfather, one of the, you know, early most successful people in the business, Jackie Coogan. You want to tell people who he was before I do? That'd be fantastic.
Well, my grandfather was, a lot of the audience would remember him as Uncle Fester on the Addams Family, and probably my earliest memories were that. I know he did a little tour, even one of my uncles had put together. Anthony, it was an evening with Jackie Coogan. He would actually dress up as Uncle Fester and go out to college circuits and with the whole thing, and Lurch would join him, and the two of them would be you know,
really?
This evening for people to ask questions and then also you know, ask him about his earlier days in silent film.
You're telling me Fester and Lurch would go on tour?
Absolutely.
That's fantastic.
And you know, they would tell stories of shooting that show. They did a lot of episodes really quick in their two seasons. Their rhythm back, it wasn't like 22 episodes a season or even 26. It was like 50 episodes a season.
Two seasons?
Yeah, they did two seasons. I think 1954 to 56, something like that.
Yeah, 64
to
66. Only two seasons?
Yeah, and The Munsters was also on for the same 2 years on another channel, both for exactly the same 2 years.
I would have lost a bet on that. Two seasons seems not even close.
No, and they produced a lot of episodes, and that's common for studios to do that out there. If people are wondering, they'll see two baseball movies come out, or two war movies, or two like love story movies, or two movies just so similar of a plot. You're like, oh, that's a rip, like Friends with Benefits, or what was the other one? The Ashton Kutcher, No Strings Attached.
Yes.
Those were this exact same movie coming out, and that's because. I mean, I don't know if you have a perspective of why that is, but I think it's because of just chicken shit studio executives seeing something get greenlighted at a studio, go, going, oh, I've had this similar script or this story. Let's do it and beat them to the punch. And oftentimes the first one released will be this, you know, they'll try to steal their thunder.
Well, yeah, I think that's why so many things get remade as well, is because, and you know, there's just a theory, but I think, you know, it's nobody knows what's going to be a big hit. So for somebody to green light something, they want either people that have already made money, a story that has already made money, something where if it doesn't work, they can turn around and go, well, look, I did my job. It just, the audience changed. And I think that's why, you know, shows get remade. The same movies, they run it as many sequels as they can, and then they do a reboot. What does Spider-Man?
I'm looking at a movie on IMDb. It's called What Women Want, and it is starring Osric Chow and Damien Chen. And it is a foreign market remake of the Mel Gibson film.
And
what was the remake of the Patrick Dempsey, the Can't Buy Me Love? There was a remake of that with an African American cast. To be politically correct,
All right,
it was a black cast. All right, get that out there. I was in Adventures of Babysitting. We had the rainbow gangs, and we had the blues bar scene, and that was contentious. But I don't think anybody has a problem with me saying that.
No, probably not.
No. So Hollywood does it. They recycle. And instead of us remaking Asian pictures, now they're remaking ours.
They're probably a good move to recast Mel, by the way.
We've outsourced everything. Oh, no, this is awful.
I told you I got Mel's new book, Mel Kampf.
No, that's nice. Thank you.
Yeah, it's not a joke. You can use all that often. He hasn't had a good
boy. Mel Gibson, Charlie Sheen, people that took on the thunderous powers that be and just opened their big fat mouths and.
Difference between those two.
Well, one is independently producing and directing and making and has a studio, and there's hundreds of millions, billions of dollars riding on this man's box office. And the other is, Charlie Sheen, who I don't know if the Ashton Kutcher version has been doing well on ratings. Do you know if the ratings have gone up or down?
I do not know.
Have you watched the show since? Did you watch the show with Charlie?
I didn't watch the show beforehand. I saw reruns, funny show. I just don't watch a whole lot of sitcoms anymore. But funny show, and I did watch the first show without him, which was the first show I had watched in a while, just out of curiosity. And I thought he was good. I thought he was very good. But I do not know what the ratings are. I would assume initially the ratings would be up just because there's a huge curiosity. Everybody's talking about it. But it's already, its eighth season?
So it was the highest rated sitcom on TV.
It
followed formula to the T and was hysterical. I mean, I thought I caught, same as you, I'd caught an episode or two prior to, Charlie's flare-up. And it was the first line, hookers and cocaine. And I was just like, whoa, this is really risky for a show with a kid on it, and it's on network television, and not, I don't know if it's like was on a family hour, but
a lot of stuff they got away with. It was a funny show.
Here's a Reuters article. It says 2.5 Men ratings surge validates decision to bring back the show and replace him.
Well, and this has nothing to do with that show in particular, but after how many, eight seasons, nine seasons, and then a major cast switch, at what point in time does
What shows don't have cast switches?
Well, yes, but at what point in time does John Cryer have to
Charlie's
jump
Angels?
The shark?
They slipped in different angels every other season. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, well, they would have kept Farrah if they could.
They replaced Bo and Luke Duke. It's called The Dukes of Hazzard. You're in the title. You're getting paid. You're happy. Your dick's swinging out. I'm a damn, Duke brother on TV. You start holding up the network. All of a sudden, you're replaced by Cousins.
Can you name the two Cousins?
Absolutely not.
I'm going to come with this, and then I'm going to feel miserable about it. I'm going to come with Coy and Vance Duke.
Wow.
I feel like such a douche.
That's the that I really loved Dukes of Hazzard. That was one of my favorite shows. I was like, what? 6, 7, 8 years old when that was on of Friday nights, CBS, followed by dun, 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 the Hulk. The Incredible Hulk.
I enjoyed the Hulk. I got to be honest. I didn't know that. I mean, if you were to do that song again right now, I still probably would not know it's the Hulk.
I was out of breath when I said it.
It was asthma Hulk.
It is piano, and I should have come with that better. But Hulk was one of those ones as a kid. I was just into it. I was into comic books. I loved comic books. Hulk totally tapped into, you know, that thing as a kid and the rage monster that an 8-year-old can have. And, you know, keeping it, you know, in check. That's also...
You're giving me, as a child, you're telling me the deep meaning you found behind the Hulk.
Yeah.
He wasn't just a big green badass.
No. It was a show with a lot of themes. He was lonely, walking the road. That resonated with me. And then when he would rage on and lift the car.
You were a troubled child, apparently.
No, and then, you know, what was weird about being a kid, and we'll, you know, come back to me, because it's really hard for an actor not to talk about themselves. I got to work on a lot of great shows as a kid, and one of them was The Waltons. And I was on it for a year, so I was basically iconic officially show. On, you know, a network show. They were cheating. They were doing like 26 episodes a season, and I did like 20 of them. And that, you know, really big for me in my career as a young child actor who had only been in it several years when that happened.
Huge show.
But it was at the tail end. It was like the 8th season of 9 seasons.
Still.
And they
throw in Ashton Kutcher at that point, and that show's got another 4 seasons.
They did. They swapped out John Boy. He was like, I'm busy. I don't know. Maybe there was some reason he couldn't do the show. And they're like, oh, he got wounded in the war, and we've replaced him with an actor with another mole on his face. And they didn't put that. It wasn't a fake one. They actually just found an actor with the mole. And he didn't look
anything
like that.
Enrique Iglesias? Is that who they put in there?
No, but they will replace you. Look out. Don't peek your head above too much. Don't, you know, there's a whole system.
I'm not even a pyramidal structure. And I assume I'll be replaced.
Hold on, they're knocking. They're here. That was fast.
Quick question for you on the Waltons, though, is that not too long ago, if I remember correctly, there was, I think, a phone commercial that had all the Waltons at the end of the commercial. You just saw the house. And you heard all the cast members saying goodnight to each other.
Yeah.
And it was like 3 hours of goodnight at the end of the commercial.
Goodnight, Grandpa. Goodnight,
yeah.
John Boy. Goodnight, Grandma.
Was your voice in that?
Probably not. But I got to do that on the show a bunch.
That's why I'm asking. I didn't know.
No, that was really fun. That was, you know, fun to be part of that that tradition on the show of being in the closing goodnights over the picture of the house at night. And we're, you know, the economy's rough. You have families, having tough times and jobs, foreclosures, and a lot of families are actually moving back in with their parents, you know, and it's like we're having a Waltons all over again. And so that's happening across the country. And I'm sure there's, you know, stories to be told there.
I'm sure they're remaking it now, probably, as
they,
we speak.
They are. Oh, look, volume. Oh, my God. Can I wonder if I have.
Oh, my goodness. Now, I already know the answer to this question, but have you ever worked with the Hulk? Because before I get into my story, I'm pretty sure you met him before?
I had, and we worked with him together. But before that, years before, because of the Waltons, I had been on a Battle of the Network Stars.
That's fantastic.
And the Hulk being CBS and the Waltons being CBS... There we were on the same team, and that was very fun. You know, you're throwing elbows at Tootie. You're trying to get around.
How old were you at that point in time?
Eight or 9 years old.
And you were the size of his bicep.
Oh, yeah. And they had all the little kids. So they had, like, obviously, you know, throw the ball at the dunk tank. You know, they'd put, like, BJ and the Bear in there or whatever, and you'd, like, throw the ball. They had other games that you didn't have to, like, physically face down the Hulk.
Yeah, I mean, because at some point in time, Tootie versus the Hulk becomes relatively unfair, I would assume.
No. And that music's got to stop because it's kind of bringing me down. And Lou was such a great guy. Lou Ferrigno is such a great guy. And I was such a big fan. I was, you know, I'm a fanboy. That's the problem when I work with, I've worked with a lot of great actors.
You helped bring about one of the cooler moments when I first got to this town. Actually, you played a part in two of them, a huge part. The Rodney one we can get to later, but
yeah. we'll share Rodney either in a bit or perhaps another
God
show. That's
Rodney.
A good story. Rodney is a really good story.
But the Hulk story is fantastic because I didn't know that you had known or had met him before. And to be honest with you, I don't know if he had known he had met you before.
No, he certainly wouldn't have. I mean, I was this little boy. Like, why do I talk in the Arnold voice?
Well, that's,
right? Lou.
Well, that's the so thing. Strange. It's from different countries, but the same accent. I believe, like, I believe it is the accent from Musseldom, because once you get to a certain level, boom, that's the accent you have.
It's the jaw muscles. They make you talk a certain way. No, he wouldn't remember me from Adam. Absolutely not.
No. And we worked with him for, you know, a couple of months, and he may not now. But
we worked with who was also on that, Joey Buttafuoco.
Joey Buttafuoco.
Oh,
that was interesting.
And Rodney Dangerfield. Lou. And so Lou, you know, there would be a lot of off time, and you're, you know, hanging in the trailers, and you had brought.
Well, I had gotten a call from one of the ADs in the office, and he said, come here and try to get Lou out of the office. And so I went in the office, and Lou was just killing time. To his defense, he was bored. We called him in probably 14 hours earlier than necessary. And so he's sitting around. He's looking for something to do. And he went into the office to talk and ended up with a prop slinky that was an enormous slinky. And he's sitting on the desk, sitting on a chair at the desk, just shink, 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 just flipping it back and forth, which is fine until he does it for about 12 consecutive minutes, in which case they call me and say, get Lou the fuck out of the office. So we,
you guys get trailers in our contract. We get our trailers. We should be there, like near the camera
or
in the production office. That's really bugging guys, right?
Yeah.
That would be bugging. Be where you're supposed to be.
If we were smart, we would have just put the slinky on a cartoon fishing rod and then just dragged it all the way back to his trailer. But instead,
I picture him actually lumbering after that right now. He's lifting up cars on the way, you know, to get to
it. He's a nice guy, but he was just bored, like I said. And so I, for some reason, decided the best plan was to run back to the house and grab our whatever the video game was at the time, which was probably a PlayStation or something along those lines, Nintendo, one of those, and ran back, grabbed that, and then hooked it up. And so first thing we did, hooked it up in his trailer, brought him back, told him we had a game for him to play. And I believe we taught him how to play the some sort of driving rallycross game.
Yeah. I was playing that too with you guys. We were burning a lot of time in the trailer playing this game. It was through mountains, and you're like up in the other cars' butts, and it was really fun. I was running them off the road.
Now, before we did that, because I do have a question about that, because I've told a story about that before, which I may have somehow added a happier ending to the story. I don't know. You're going to have to confirm it. But before that, one of my favorite moments, I haven't been in town that long, and you and I go into the trailer to try to keep him busy, and somebody had brought
the video of the Incredible Hulk. So episodes of the full episodes, right?
A full episode. I think two or three full episodes.
And we open the door, and there he is, remote in hand, happily watching the Hulk.
Oh, which was awesome. But now he's watching it saying, I remember this episode. I really jumped 20 feet. I remember this episode. And I'm trying to keep a straight face. So, because, I mean, he's a nice guy, but I don't know if I don't want to piss him off. He can still kill me easily.
No, we made him very happy, because when he jumped and the guys got in the car and they started to pull away, and I was like, go run up and, you know, pull up the bumper of the car. My favorite moment on the show. And that made him really happy.
You almost got me killed, because you would say it before the character would do it. You'd be like, oh, you're going to get angry. And then he would get angry. And I'm trying not to laugh. And then you'd be like, go grab the top of the car. Go grab the car before he runs away. And he'd go grab the car and pick up the back of the car so the guy couldn't drive. And I'm trying really hard to not laugh as you're saying everything that's going to happen before it happens. And he was a proud Hulk.
He was very he did. He liked watching your show. Well, you'd be proud too if that's the thing you're, you know, known
great.
For. I mean, Gus, honestly, when people come up to me and they're like, dude, you know, dishes are done, dude, man, whatever, they always say it wrong too. But that always, it's like, well, you know, at least it's something. You know, it's like, fine, I've done, you know, fine work in Cousins, and, you know, stretched myself in after school specials for ABC. But when they, you know, come up in the Stoner movie, it's like, okay, I'll take it. You know,
that's awesome. That wouldn't knock it for one second, nor him. That was, like I say, that was one of the greater moments when I got here. I'm watching the Hulk with the Hulk. That was fantastic. I couldn't have asked for a cooler moment.
Actors love that. I mean, I'm a fanboy when I work with actors, and I'll be, you know, Joe Montana, and I'm like, that's Joe Montana's right there. Oh my God, I really like your work. But then people will ask me, like, we'll be around town with friends or family, we'll come in from out of town, and we'll be around LA, and you'll see people. You'll see Paris Hilton in her car with her sister Nikki, you know, down on Robertson. You'll see these things. You'll see Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston. You'll see Britney Spears. You know, if you're out in like the Beverly Hills or the shopping districts, or, you know, even on Hollywood Boulevard premieres and stuff, you see them. And so people will be like, should I go up to them? So should I say something to them? You know, do you think they would, you know, want to hear that? I'm like, they're in this business. They do want to hear that, you know, you like the work. You know, they sit in their little, their castles. I know, I have a nice castle, paid with my total babysitter checks. The babysitter, what's up with the, oh man.
Well, so here's the ending of the story that I have told people, and tell me if this is not true. Okay. And even if you tell me it's not true, I'm probably still telling the story this way anyway. But, from what I remember, once we set up the game, we set up the game to drive. You have played it with me probably before. He had not. So we set it up. You're both driving. I have to leave. I run out. And the way I tell the story was you knocked over his car and he couldn't get the car flipped back. And he looked at you and said, how do I set it up to play alone?
That's absolutely true.
That is
true.
Okay. Good.
He wanted to play solo player and he didn't remember me from Battle of the Network Stars. So there was no, he was like, as a matter of fact, this is my trailer, get out. I would gladly sit there and watch the Hulk play. It's fun knowing that the stars are normal people and they'll play, and Wopat's in your kitchen. Wopat's in my kitchen.
That's good terminology.
Thank you.
Tom Wopat reference. That's fantastic.
I don't have much, you know. Is that a sports? No. Wopat was the Dukes of Hazzard. Sorry.
Did you just ask if Luke Duke was a sport?
Yeah, I don't know. You asked me earlier who Tim Tebow was. Tebow. So I don't.
Tim Tebow.
Yeah, isn't that horrible?
Tim Tebow's kind of a sport. He's got sporty. That's sporty.
I know nothing.
If we
about
talk
that
about
stuff.
Penn State stuff later on, that's sport ish.
Oh, Penn State. Yeah.
Oh, that's no good.
Ooh, yeah. You're going to be a tight end. Oh, that's bad.
That's no good.
That's no good.
That is no good. Oh, man. Are you going to see the movie?
This is all great dog food, all right? Now, here, take this for yourself, okay? Jeez, I had better food at the ball game, you know? I tell you, this steak still has marks where the jockey was hitting it.
Rodney was great.
Loved Rodney. I still love Rodney, but God bless him. That was also one of the better experiences. Him and an early Dom DeLuise.
Oh, Dom was great. Yes. Dom was totally great. He was actually, what was sad was, you know, he would totally spew and waste a bunch of material, and then they turn the cameras on and it would be great. But Dom was always on and he was always nuts.
Yeah,
Jonathan
yeah.
Winters too. I'd worked with Jonathan Winters. I did the last episode of Mork and Mindy.
Really?
I'm a total show killer. Like, I've killed the Waltons, and I'm like that guy on Too Close for Comfort or whatever. No. Happy Days
guy.
Roger on Happy Days. Yeah. I can kill a series, too. No. Hey, NBC, you didn't hear that.
I had no idea. First of all, what is McGinley? Ted McGinley? Is that the guy who's the neighbor on, who is Roger on Happy Days and the neighbor on... Married with Children, and I believe he said he finished Love Boat as well.
Oh, man.
I believe after they drowned Julie McCoy, I believe he came on, and he was...
Put him on 3.5 Men, or 2.5 Men, he'll kill that show, too.
I was actually just on a cruise for the first time ever, for my dad's 70th birthday, and there was somewhere around 1,000 Julie McCoy references. Julie McCoy, Gopher...
I also did a Love Boat. I don't know if you saw that.
I know you did
the
a Love
credits.
Boat.
Yeah, and it wasn't the 2 hour we're actually taking all these people to a cruise and an island and have fun. And it wasn't the hour episode where it was shot in the soundstage. They're like, it's a 90-minute episode. And I'm like, cool, we're gonna try. No. You go to 20th Century Fox, open the soundstage, there's the boat.
Really?
Yeah. whole thing, raddest set in the world. They had the pool in it, and it was really, 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 really cool.
The they whole boat in one soundstage.
The whole boat. They had different levels. They had, sorry, that's a little loud. They had different levels. They had hallways that were looked different ways. One way, you shoot it one way. The carpet's one color, texture. Shoot it the other way, and the lights look different, so they could use the sets.
That's
they had the bar,
very cool.
You know, all the bar situation. Oh, yeah. Hey,
that's
I got to work with the Pollyanna, Disney star. I got to work with Reggie Jackson was on my episode.
Really?
Yeah, I told Reggie Jackson to choke up a little bit on it. It was just really.
I think your advice must have worked.
It's fun. Dude, it's so fun scampering around on these old sets and, you know, you having watched the shows. That's the weird thing is being on the shows that you've been watching or.
Well, that's the cool thing. I mean, well, for me, when talking to you also, but you're a buddy of mine now, so I try not to let it on so it doesn't go to your head. But, when I do look at your credits, it's basically every show I've ever watched as a kid, you were also on. And that's just the television shows as far as. Every show that I've loved, like my top 10 shows you were on.
I'm getting, once again, there's that Woody again when people flatter me like that. Thanks.
Well,
thanks,
if it makes
man.
You feel any better, when I came here, I realized you're a little douchey, but overall, it's fantastic. Although before I met you, I knew you, I knew your name at least from paperwork. From dealing with your grandfather, which is ironic, the Coogan Act, which is, which is a child protection law?
Child labor law. They brought back a mining law, like miners mining. Like kids actually, digging coal
miners
out of
mining.
The mountain. Yeah. And there was an old law. It was like common law that, anything the kids in your house made were the parents' property, the parents. Go work in the field. It's the parents. There's no earnings for that. So when Hollywood came along and he'd been discovered by Chaplin and after the kid – there was a series of kind of copycat movies like Old Clothes and Peck's Bad Boy, My Boy, Daddy. They all were the same image
just
of
like
an older.
Just like we were talking about them doing now.
Yeah, a rip. And it was more of like a series of Pauly Shore movies. Not the same character, not the same, but this totally same, situation. It's a Pauly Shore movie. So if you're into that, you're going to go see those, whether it's, he's on a jury or in a biodome, whatever it is.
And if you're into that, you should be ashamed of yourself.
So, and for me, I need to do more babysitter movies. That's absolutely clear. And they're waiting for me to cap that trinity of babysitting films. And, it can't be a walk-on, and I'm glad the sitter didn't call me. Because that would have been, I want to lead a star, as the dad or.
Are you going to see that movie?
I have to. It's homework. the New York Times Magazine Online or New York Magazine Online wants to ask me why I wasn't in it.
Are you going to let them know that you're not maybe the person they should ask that question
they
to?
They think you are. They think you've been on a few shows and they think that you're rich forever. They think that you have connections and power. You worked on this movie with so-and-so, and that's, it's tough. It's tough to keep. But the networking, that really does – it's the only thing. And this is the one bit of advice for actors out there, like we promised. But it is about the people you work with and the circle you keep, and the friends that you know. That absolutely helps. Look at the, Vince Vaughn and that whole troop of guys that came up. John Favreau and Patrick Van Horn and they all really truly were friends coming up and they look out for each other as they go on and start working. I want to work with this person. This is kind of why I called you, Gus. You're if I'm going to sit there and talk, and ego is a huge part of Hollywood. You have this brand, this image makes me sick too because it's like you didn't think about that when you're on Battle of the Network Stars.
No, and that's why you paid me to talk about your credits a couple of moments ago. That's that all ties in very nicely.
Thank you. But it does. It makes you blush in a weird way. But the focus you get used to, watching yourself or not. I hate those actors that are like, I don't watch my own work. You were in this Academy Award winning. No, I never saw it.
Well, I will say this, you are one of the easier actors, and I certainly am not claiming to have an immense amount of experience with,
Easier, like bend me over the casting couch easy, or?
Well, there has to be.
How do you mean easy,
reason.
Speaking of Penn State?
Casting sessions aside, there's a.
There's been a rash of, like, arrests and Hollywood pedophile rings. Corey Feldman had mentioned that, talking about... Corey Feldman went on network television, did an interview on pedophilia in Hollywood, that there are rings of men that prey on the young talent, up and coming, established, it doesn't matter.
I assume you didn't know anything about this when you were younger.
You assume wrong.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. What...
You do? Are you familiar with this coming up? Because Corey Feldman really brought it to light recently.
I have no idea. I didn't know.
There were rumors.
Then.
And not only were there rumors, they were people. And you knew who they were. And your mother, being a good stage manager or stage mother, my mom wasn't really a stage mother. She was my momager. And, you know, since she had a connection in Hollywood, she knew about the set and the, you know, power struggles that can happen between advertisers and directors and this. So she knew when to keep her mouth shut and when to speak up. So that she would speak up and she goes, watch out for this one. Don't go anywhere alone with them. Don't let them take any pictures. Don't, very explicit. I'm 7 years old, 6 years old and being warned about certain people.
Wow.
Three or four now.
Did you understand at that point in time, or was it like a kid being told, don't get in a car, and you go, okay, I'm being told this is bad, but I don't fully understand?
No, I understood it because of Gary Coleman and his show. Remember when
the bike shop.
Had him, you know, take off his top and wanted to snap some athletic wrestling photos. So kids were aware of that. I mean, they were aware of, you know, molestation and pedophilia. 25% of kids have been molested in this country.
In the bike shop?
Well, usually. Where else? I mean, you know. And not to be, you know, bring anybody down, but it absolutely was at least, you know, thought to be true. And, you know, there were, back in the day, especially for certain people, it was, you know, watch out for this person. And you knew their name, you knew what they did, and they were always around the events with the kids. There'd be Youth and Film Awards at the time. Now it's the Young Artist Awards. And, you know, it could be anything from everything, from producers, publicists, press agents, photographers.
Would this
anybody
be
could be a suspect. And I'm not necessarily naming any sort of position or person. Just think of the people surrounding events.
You specifically were told names. You don't have proof, but I mean, you were told names of people to stay away from based on rumors.
Yeah. And the other kids would talk about and go, we know about them and we know about them. And new kids coming on, you let them know too. You go, hey, I noticed that person approached you and you, or you came with them. They would be grooming a new young kid and go, hey, you know, you start talking to their parents or, you know, and unfortunately, parents will do anything. And this is for parents, you know, listening that have kids or have questions about getting kids into the business. By the way, the number is 1-800-893-9562 to call in with any questions on this topic, any topic. Call in now. If you're listening to it a few days later or on iTunes, don't. It wouldn't be live at that point. That would be kind of silly. But now, you know, call in now. That's number again is 1-800-893-9562. We are going to take a short break here, ladies and gentlemen, and I wish we had a sponsor. And for those sponsors listening, as we've probably shown you this pilot episode of the call sheet, you could be mentioned here right now. You're really missing out on an opportunity. So we'll be right back. Have a break. Get a drink.
That was very, very seductive. That was nice.
Thank you. thank you so much for listening to The Call Sheet. I'm Keith Coogan, and we're here with Kenneth Gus August. Thanks for joining us again, and I hope you had a good break.
Yeah, and you can probably just shorten that to Gus at this point in time. Seems kind of long.
All right. I just feel for legal reasons, and, you know, when the money does start rolling in on this show, we're going to have to sign contracts, and so I just wanted to establish that Kenneth Gus August.
Until then, you can shorten it.
All right. Thanks, Gus. Well, we were talking about a really terrible topic, pedophilia rings in Hollywood. And yes, they could be out there. So watch your kids. Protect kids. Parents will, you know, if you approach a mom with a little five-year-old on Hollywood and Vine, you're like, oh, your kid's so cute. I want to put him in the movies. They'd be like, great. And you could do anything. You'd not pay them. You could not have, you know, follow the rules or the school or the trailer or supervision. And the rules are, you know, they have to be within sight and sound of their child at all times. So that's what you watch out for as a parent. You get your kids in the industry. You have a right to totally be with, because there's stunts and fire and this and animals. Something could go wrong. So you could be there to protect your kid. It's okay. You absolutely have that right and vociferously demand to execute that right when you're on a set with your kid.
Well, you know, speaking of, as a person who doesn't have a child, I, you know, with everything in the news these days, I may be a little paranoid, but I would just staple your child to yourself, and that way you're safe.
Those little leashes? Oh, God.
Oh, I don't like the leashes. I don't like the leashes. I would rather the staple idea.
Is he a special child? Do you have to watch out?
I think usually it's the adult that's special in that case. They can't keep up with the kid, and so they do the leash thing.
Oh, man, that is so – it's just degrading to the kid and to the parent. You can't, you know, say, hey – Schmucko, get over here. You know, stop playing with that.
No. Well, some of the kids can. Speaking of Hollywood and Vine, which I heard you mention somewhere in that in that slightly depressing story.
Thank you.
Were you anywhere near Hollywood and Vine yesterday when whoever that crazy guy was who started shooting at random moments?
It was an actor, and they told him he didn't get the part.
That's quite possible. From what I read, there were a lot of people right nearby who heard gunshots and just kept filming, thinking, oh, cool, they're filming something.
Of course, there's a set around the corner.
I'm sure.
I heard they cleared out a fake Zuccotti Park set in New York. They were shooting, like, Law & Order, and they had a fake – the episode was about, like, a Zuccotti Park, and kids had come in, like, real, actual Occupy Wall Street kids who had crashed the set. And they thought they were getting kicked out, security. They're like, oh, it's happening again. This is a fake park. This is a fake park. And they're like, we're rapping. We're clearing the set.
That is funny.
Go home, people. Please, go home.
That is funny. Now, do you live anywhere near the Hollywood Hills?
I can see the Hollywood Hills beautifully. Right, abutting. Let's say abutting the Hollywood Hills. I catch the effluence that runs down the Hollywood Hills.
Well,
it's made up of like it's silicone and cocaine and it's horrible. It's suntan lotion.
There's a
goo
smell to
that
it.
Comes dripping down Laurel Canyon Boulevard. It's awful.
I would definitely step over that if you can. There is apparently a push. The people in the Hollywood Hills are apparently annoyed by all these tourists stopping by on the street to keep getting cool angles of the Hollywood sign. And they're trying to pass some kind of law to prevent people from either getting close or going anywhere other than the designated.
Right, driving up and going up Beechwood Canyon and then turning on Heliotrope. Don't do that. It's on Google Maps. I mean, you can't. Dude, you're like 30 yards from the thing. It's really cool.
Have you ever actually been up to the actual Hollywood?
No, I never had the balls because I always heard there was a ground sensing radar and the helicopters would be on you. They'll release the hounds.
Yeah, it was. I did do it once shortly after we came into town, and I was a little nervous because I heard all the same shit. You
went up to the sign. You touched the Hollywood sign.
I was poking my head over the H. It was
sweet.
It was really really cool.
Sweet.
But. On the way, I mean, it wouldn't have happened. I was hiking with a buddy, James, and we just kind of were hiking. And I was, you know, I've been in town for literally months, not even a year yet, and so we're still, you know, everything's new and exciting still. And so you're kind of walking around, and we see the Hollywood sign, and he's like, "Dude, you got to go. You know, we can get to that." And I'm like, What is it? What does that mean, dude? Aren't we not allowed there? He goes, no, no. And now James, good dude, but you know, relatively fearless.
There's no fences. There's no like.
Oh, there's all.
Are there signs that say, you know, this is not a good idea to come here?
They have fences or thorn bushes. There's all sorts of ways where they don't want you to get up, but. Apparently, if you kind of cut through one thorn bush and then shimmy up this little drainage pipe like you're Adam West, you get up this hill. And then the thing that scared me was I had heard, you know, you'd heard the same stories that you just mentioned as far as some sort of security system that you think is there. But I didn't realize how high it was. And I'm not a big heights fan. I'll do stuff, you know, just to not let the heights thing stop me from doing it. But, you know, we climbed up this thing. We Adam Wested our way up this height. And all of a sudden I take a step and I watch this rock that I stepped on start rolling down the hill. And I'm watching it for like 2 minutes as it just keeps rolling down the hill. Then I look up and there's this small two-person plane flying by at head level. And I see the guy look at me and I'm like, well, I'm screwed. That's it. As if
you're like, you see him smile at you. Like.
Yeah, he looked like, oh shit, that guy shouldn't be there. And I'm thinking, well, all right, we're screwed. We're in trouble now. But you know, this guy's flying a two-person plane. What is he getting on the horn immediately, or does he get the bat
he's calling in the ground? Swarm.
Exactly. He's up there.
CB95 moving to quadrant 7. Standard 2x2 formation.
Exactly. So at that point, though, between the height thing and the loose sand and Johnny Airplane flying
by,
had
you already poked your head over the H, or was this?
We're still probably 100 yards away from the D still. Whoa. And the guy that I'm with, and probably still another 50 yards down, and the guy that I'm with, I'm like, I finished looking at the plane, and then I'm, where's James? And James is, you know, 40 yards away from me, just leaping like Peter Pan from spot to spot. You're like, really? Just no fear, huh? No, like I see myself sliding down the hill and cartoon-like hitting every tree on the way down. And he's leaping from spot to spot. Sorry, habit to try to stop that. And
but you can say whatever the fuck you want on the show.
I know,
this is okay.
It's
not. It's like we don't have to go out of our way to curse. But I was totally raised on, you know, George Carlin's 7 words you can never say on television. And you know, my parents cursed like sailors. My grandparents cursed like. They're bitches. I don't know. I grew up in, you know, foul, and that's Hollywood too. You know, confession. Yes. I know you're out there. I don't think you'll be listening. Earl Hamner, creator of the Waltons. He was a dirty man, dirty old man.
First of all.
Funny, dirty, but kind of those like, grandpa, that's not appropriate for an 8-year-old, you know.
First of all. Earl's listening.
Earl's listening now. That's at CBS. Yeah, let me cross that out
around.
Of my networks right now.
Let's stop screwing around. Earl is listening.
How much pull does Richard Thomas have right now? Did he get like a movie of the week made in like 3 weeks? Is that?
I don't know. That is a good question. if he can, we should call him. We should definitely call him sometime soon.
So the sign, you guys got us away, you got up to the sign okay, there was no dogs, there was no police.
No, well, that was the thing is, they definitely cut off the paths to the sign. Once we got up there, once I followed Peter Pan over to the sign, because it was either go back myself or, you know, leap across the thing, you know, from spot to spot. So, but once you get there, you walk up and you're like, oh, there's beers up here. Like somebody was
condoms.
Yeah, there was
like,
probably somebody right up. Like one of the, there's probably somebody there drinking
like
a beer.
A bowl for like water for like dogs.
There was probably a man drinking a beer and heard somebody say, oh shit, there's a plane up here. Oh no, which was me. And then he took off the other way because he didn't want, you know, he didn't know who we were.
You know what I think? The attempt to get to this big insignia, this big, you know, symbol of Hollywood, quick riches, stardom, fame, attention, love, money, you know, security, maybe not so much security because it is a really flash, pan up, down, you're in, you're out, you know, you work on a series for 19 years and then you don't. And then you'll come back and then not. And you know what I mean? It's like really tough business. And that's what, you know, brings me back to the bone machine and that it's an illusion. They vamped up Hollywood Boulevard. It used to, if you watch, Cheech and Chong movie on Hollywood Boulevard, it's a pit hole. and you know, homeless and scummy and really ratty stores, and they've redid it just like Times Square,
which makes
it's
sense.
All commercial, huge, and signs and really huge sidewalks.
If you're gonna have tourists showing up from all over the world, I never understood why that place was such a shithole.
Well, there's no there in L.A. There's no Woody Allen had
Make
said that
there,
in any hall.
There.
There's no, I know, and they have been with City Walk and Hollywood Boulevard, and I think they should do that with the Hollywood sign. Because since I've mentioned it now on air, the copyright pen, you know, patent, copyright trademark of the Hollywood Sign Corporation and the Hollywood Division, whoever oversees that, you can't, by the way, people, you can't use the Hollywood sign in any movie without approval from the Hollywood sign. It's not a public thing. That's a private trademark thing.
Really?
You can't use a picture of it on your website. You have to actually get permission.
So should I assume it's just stolen 95% of the time?
Yeah, totally. So if they catch you, they're going to come down on you with Thor's mighty hammer. But the point is there's no they've created those places for tourists to come and spend their money. And they can go to shows. They can see tapings of shows, or they can go, you know, take the tours and see movie sets. I do that. I'm a fan of seeing, like, you know, where do they shoot, you know, the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, or on the same block is like where they shot Halloween, or it's like a block away, going to, you know, Doheny Mansion.
Which
like
is
that.
Interesting, because with your history, and having been more than right in the middle of it for most of your life, if not all of your life, it's interesting to me that you're still that entertained by the whole aspect of the business, the history of the business, all of that you can get that much of a kick out of it still is interesting to me.
I found myself on a website looking at the old RKO 40-acre back lot. It's the lost 40-acre lot. They used to shoot Star Trek, and they shot Gone with the Wind on there.
Wow.
They shot King Kong on there. It's now homes.
But now,
that's what I am. I'm kind of a film geek, and not, you know, I haven't seen every classic movie, or, you know, there's like a whole tome of movies you're supposed to have seen. You know, you have to have seen this movie, or you're not in the club. I try to catch, you know, at least a third of them if I can. I'm drawn to some more, you know, some stories more than others. But I love the history of town. I love how the town was built. I love where, you know, all the honeys would be up on Franklin, and all those houses with the pools, all those like condos or what are the apartment buildings, like mm-hmm. apartment that had pools in the center. That's because they would literally drive up the stake bed and all the girls would pile in. They all lived along that row, and the pool was so you could walk by and be like, the brunette over there. I want those two blondes. Get in the truck. And they would take them down, and they'd be chorus girls or background or, you know, and then picked out Elizabeth Smart.
That is
or Elizabeth Short. The black
star. That is a huge difference, by the way.
Elizabeth Smart, I apologize. I know. Yeah, no.
By the
Elizabeth
way,
Short.
Possibly even more than whoever the hell Earl is, Elizabeth Smart is listening right now. And she hated every bit of that. But you apologize. I'm sure she's moved on.
Hollywood is intangible, and, you know, there's no place to really go to enjoy that. But the Walk of Fame is really cool, and I'm really proud to. There's my grandfather,
yes.
Jackie Coogan, has a star on Hollywood and Vine. It's actually on Vine right in front of the W.
That's
and,
great.
I go down there every once in a while, and I'll, you know, clean it off and, you know, talk to him. That and his grave out at Holy Cross Cemetery by the airport. And I'll go sit on his grave and talk to Grandpa.
Were you really?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's great. I mean, obviously a well-deserved star, but I mean, when you were a kid, how aware of what he had done were you? I mean, you didn't. When did you become Keith Coogan?
I was aware really at like 8 years old. When I saw the kid, but I'd been working for a few years, but I had the other name, the Keith Mitchell. I worked under my birth name because it was my mother's father that was Jackie Coogan. So I was actually born Keith Mitchell and worked in television under that name. And then I changed it to Coogan when I was 16. It was after he died. He died in 84. And as part of a transition from TV to features, I changed it to Coogan. I was hoping someday, you know, to be walking on the, you know, Walk of Fame, or someone would see something I did, or Coogan, or, you know, and maybe somebody's mom would go, I know who Jackie Coogan was, and, you know, tell the story. Because I think it's children need protection, and there's the Coogan Act, which they put into place to protect minors' earnings.
Yes, why don't you tell people about that, actually?
Well, you know, children need protection. They need protection from their own parents,
Let's not steer back off into that.
Yeah, children, if you find yourself in a back room with a publicist, use protection.
Adults, if you find yourself in a back room with that.
Wow, can you imagine being a woman, an actress in this business?
No, I try not to.
It's hard enough being an actor in this business, but being an actress and, you know, there's all the things that come with that, and ageism and sexualizing them really young, and then that must be really, really tough. What are you trying to go back to?
I'm trying to go back to your grandfather and what the Coogan Act actually is and why it came into play.
He had amassed a fortune working under contract with MGM after The Kid, and a series of movies produced by the Jackie Coogan Productions company. In like co-production with MGM. Mm. And they said it was about $4 million back then.
Wow. Back then.
Yeah. And they talked about, you know, how is he being raised? Is he being schooled? And he had the finest education and, you know, private teachers. And then not. He went to like college in Santa Cruz, I think. There's a whole other story there where his roommate was kidnapped. Remember the Lindbergh baby and everything?
Yeah.
At the time, coming out of the Depression, kidnapping somebody and getting ransom was a really good way to get some quick money. And they'd actually kidnapped.
Depends on your definition of good, I guess. But okay.
They kidnapped his roommate. His roommate had come from money and family. His family had come from money. So the two men had kidnapped him, and they had found the body with Jackie Coogan's pillowcase over his head. So they killed him too early, and they didn't get a ransom, and they were on the run, these two criminals.
How old was
18,
Jackie?
Like 18? 17 or 18 years old. Yeah, he's in like boarding school or prep school or some sort of like,
and
you know,
his roommate
it was college.
Was
he wasn't doing well. His grades weren't great, but he was, you know, muscling his way through college. He was drinking a lot. My grandfather already started, you know, having a drinking problem. And that would haunt him for years, too. But what happened was his roommate had been kidnapped. And so they interviewed him, and it's in the papers. I think it's Santa Rosa or like San Jose area. And they caught the guys.
Really?
Yeah. And they brought them to the town. And there was there was a mob formed, and they wanted blood. And it was one of the last known public lynchings in California. The crowd beat down the deputies that were protecting the prison.
Well, they were already arrested.
10,000 people. Kim Brookhart was the name of the kidnapped and murdered roommate.
Wow.
So the crowd rallied. They rammed the door. They yanked him out. They strung him up in a tree in the square, and they hung them. They hung the two guys.
Wow.
And some say, and this is family legend or heresy to talk about it or not, or I don't know, it was in a book. There was
if it was in a book,
Baby
it's gotta
Peggy
be true.
Sierra had written a book of the world's first boy king or the world's first child king. Jackie Coogan was like a biography of Jackie Coogan. They took him out and lynched him, and apparently Jackie was leading the lynching and strung him up, and the guy had gotten his hands loose and was pulling himself, and my grandfather was like, pull him down again. They pulled him down, they broke his arms.
Ouch.
And then string him back up, and they strung him back up again. So somebody said in the crowd they'd spotted him. Other people have told more elaborate stories. I've heard an amalgam of it, but supposedly he was there and part of the crowd because he wanted vengeance. This is his friend. This is his roommate. And he'd been over to their family's house, and he'd become part of the, you know, they trusted Jackie because he came from Hollywood aristocracy. So they were like Astors or something like that.
How old were you when he passed?
I was 14.
Did you ever get to ask him about,
none of that.
None of that.
Nothing about war. He served in Burma as part of the Chindit campaign. He flew glider pilots and took troops and jeeps in these huge gliders with like 33 feet wingspans. And the wings would like touch the ground. They'd use bungee cords. Plane would pass overhead, catch the cord, and lift the glider up with troops at night. Let them go, and they drift on thermal currents, go behind enemy lines because you couldn't hear it. That's why they would use gliders. Land behind enemy lines, miles behind enemy lines. Everybody could build an airstrip and then create like a really forward base.
Your grandfather was a superhero.
He was a superhero. He was Captain America.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and he wouldn't talk about that. He would, you know, absolutely be talking about, you know, working with Chaplin or, you know, Wallace Beery or other actors.
He had a close relationship with Chaplin, at least at parts of his life, did he not?
Yeah,
well, a close bond, at least.
The movie took a year and a day to shoot.
Wow.
And it was improvised script. There was nothing written. So they would come together and meet, you know, in the morning and decide on a bit to do and advance the story. And I think they shot it in continuity, so they shot it in sequence. And when he was done, he took his six-reel picture. Peters wanted to pay him his standard contract for his two-reel pictures, so he was like, he held up the negative. At the time, his wife had divorced him but wanted the film. She's like, that's his property and it's his company and I'm gonna get half. So she was trying to find it, so they were hiding and cutting the negative in a hotel in Salt Lake City. And then finally, you know, it was done and released, and it was a worldwide phenomenon. You know, the kid was loved, translated into every language. And then also my part of how they amassed some of the fortune that they had been able to amass was through merchandising. Screw George Lucas and Star Wars merchandising. That was great. But, dude, they – peanut tins, you know, like dolls, little model car, everything you could think of, you know, erasers, pencil boxes, everything, jars, think figurines. It was – they marketed the hell out of Jackie Coogan. And back then it was different.
For which he got almost nothing eventually.
Well, you know, they did, and they made their money on merchandise, whatever the family did. But what happened was he turned his – there was a a tragic car accident just before my grandfather turned 21, and his father was killed. My great-grandfather was killed, as well as Junior Durkin, who played Huck Finn in the Tom Sawyer Huck Finn movies that my grandfather had done with him.
Oh, wow.
So he was there was also a screenwriter and a ranch hand in the car. They were going down to the Coogan Ranch just south of San Diego on the Mexico border. And driving at night on a road, you know, fast. They like to drive fast. They all like to drive, you know, really, really fast. And there's no, I don't think there was any rumors about drinking or anything like that yet. They were going out to the ranch to go have a party and shoot doves and, you know, drink.
We can start some rumors if need be.
Yeah. Or no, they were coming back. They had shot, they shot a bunch of doves. They were coming back, you know, from the weekend and went off the road. And the car tumbled, and they had drawn straws for who was in the trundle seat, the back seat, with the doves. There's like a bag of doves they'd shot, and Jackie lost, so he's in the back of the car. When the car tumbled and everything, Jackie was the only one that lived.
Wow. And he was 21?
He was 20. It was his birthday party. It was like, it's coming up, and we're going to go out and have this hunting trip.
He had a
broken clavicle, and he came over and he held his father, my great-grandfather, in his arms, and the great-grandfather died in my grandfather's arms.
Wow, it's a lot of tragedy.
And they wound up in the hospital, and the press had started to catch on, and, you know, he recuperated over the weeks, got out, he got of age, and he went to look for his fortune. His mother had remarried. Actually, it was 17th or 18th birthday. So by his 20th birthday, his mother had remarried the business manager, Carl Bernstein.
Wow.
They don't know who went through the money. On the books, my great-grandfather actually had the biggest amount out on the books. He'd taken out like $60,000, but that wasn't accounting for the millions. And they said they'd spent it along the way, and there was no ironclad. They told the press there was a $1 million trust fund. Ironclad, waiting for Jackie when he came of age. He came of age, he sued, and he got half of what was left. There was about $250,000 left, and he got $126,000 as a settlement.
Of his $4 million. Wow.
Yeah.
And there's no way we can blame this on Macaulay Culkin's parents?
No. No,
okay. Just making sure.
But then, you know, the public, he lost the trial. That was another shame, is that, you know, the California law was a minor's earnings or the parents, and he lost.
So there was no real argument that the money was taken from him, but he just didn't have a legal right to it yet.
And there was nothing left. There was like, we can't take blood from a stone. And so, well, you guys will split it. I was like, what is that all about? So they split it, and it all went to attorneys. It was gone. And so then his first wife, Betty Grable, divorced him. You don't have any money. Oh, And it was over. And she married Harry James.
Really? That's what ended it?
Band leader.
That's what ended it?
I you know what?
Family,
I heard there was tension.
Family rumor?
Drinking. I mean, she was making the income. She was doing movies and making money. He wasn't. And then he consequently went in and joined...
the woman had her legs insured, did she not? She had her legs insured. If you're insuring your legs, you can afford the house at that point in time. Am I incorrect?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, the Million Dollar Legs movie with Betty Grable, it's about the horse. The horse has got Million Dollar Legs. She's in it a little bit, but she's not. But she's cute. Very, very cute. I'm a... old-time movie fan. I love all that stuff. What were we watching tonight? The trailer for...
Oh, The Three Stooges.
You're not a Three Stooges fan?
No. I'm not a Three Stooges fan.
You know, did you think the trailer was funny?
I thought the trailer was good. I was surprised that I thought the trailer was good. I mean, the thing is, I respect the Three Stooges.
Oh. Well, that's it. I think our hour is up, ladies and gentlemen.
My point. People lose interest when you talk about the Three Stooges these days.
You're right. Oh, my gosh. You're absolutely right. It's a curse, the Three Stooges. No, I think it'll do well.
If I talk long enough, I'm right.
It looked really, really funny. Go see that. I got to go see The Sitter tonight, I think. I'm going to go see The Sitter as homework for this this interview tomorrow.
That's good. Then I can ask you about it, so I don't have to go see it necessarily.
Why the heck? Dude, how come you don't got Keith Coogan in the Babysitter movie?
That's all I would scream. I'd get kicked out.
Ridiculous. Well, thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. Really appreciate it. Good night, everybody. You have a good night, and we'll let the music of my friend Jeff Fiorentino of JFRocks.com play you out. Gus, anything to say? Any bon mots?
I am happy to be here. I look forward to doing this next week.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for tuning in, and have a good night.